Tuesday. Welcome to tonight's program. We did a rebroadcast last night, Memorial Day. And I don't know why. We just did. We looked around and saw that everybody we knew was, you know, taking the day off. So we said, everybody that listened to this program will probably be taking the day off, too. So anyway, we're back live. This hour is sponsored by Roy Runnings. His message. Ta-da. His message. My religious friends never could answer my question about Noah and his three sons, Ham, Japheth, and Shem. According to the Bible, Ham, Japheth, and Shem only had male offspring. So how did the human race manage to continue? Either incest or immaculate homosexuality. Their answer was always, you gotta have faith! Not me. Keep up the good work, Roy. Immaculate homosexuality. Oh, I had a couple of friends who used to practice that, you know. Oh, there is just too much here. I didn't see this on Memorial Day, but apparently Chris Hayes on his show Up on MSNBC had the temerity to suggest something that we've been talking about on this program for a long time, and that is the extremely irritating, inclination of all the anchor people and reporter people to refer to everyone in the military as a hero. Our heroes did this. Our heroes did that. Frankly, that turns my stomach. It makes me sick. It really does. You know, we have combat medals for people who go into combat who are heroes. Somebody who joins the military and works in a radar installation or does cooking or whatever is not a hero. Somebody who joins a rifle company and never sees combat, or even if he or she he does see combat, is not a hero. Someone who joins the Marine Corps and spends 3 or 4 years in uniform and doesn't do anything but parade around and is stationed in Germany is not a hero. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I get tired of hearing it. Well, apparently Chris Hayes on his program on MSNBC is catching the lash of these stinky right-wing so-called conservative pundits led by the spider-legged general of that group, Ann Coulter. And according to Martin, who emailed me, she called Chris Hayes a woman. to Ann Coulter, calling a man a woman is an insult. Oh, Ann, you poor, poor, choked up thing, you. Ah, anyway, so I listened to the clip of Chris Hayes that Martin sent to me. And, you know, Chris Hayes is just cautious about what he says. He qualifies everything. Instead of just come out and say it. You know, he should just come out and say, I'm sick of hearing everybody in the military referred to as heroes. They're not. Maybe 1/10 of 1/10 of 1% would qualify by any military definition of hero. That leaves 99.999% as just people who put on the uniform, join the service, do whatever they're supposed to do, get the hell out. Martin writes, I'm afraid, however, the Hayes days are now numbered at MSNBC. Progressives in the mainstream are only allowed to voice heavily processed, corporate-approved liberal talking points. You know, that's true. That is very true. No offense to the people I know who are supposed liberals in mainstream media. No offense, boys and girls, but that's true. So, you know, I would tend to agree. Joe in Madison, Wisconsin, wrote to me. This came in yesterday. Mike, shouldn't today's holiday be called Un-Memorial Day? The word memorial is related to the word memory. Our corporate rulers do not want us to remember or even know about all the American soldiers who died in Iraq and Afghanistan solely to advance the goals of corporate America. Our corporate rulers do not want us to know about all the death, suffering, and devastation we inflicted on the men, women, and children of those two countries we senselessly invaded. Our corporate rulers do not want us to know about what conditions are like for so many returning vets who continue to suffer from painful, debilitating physical and or psychological injuries as a result of these unjust criminal invasions. Similarly, our corporate rulers do not want us to know about the shockingly high rate of suicides among these returning vets. Oh, but I forgot. Events like Memorial Day, along with all the other phony patriotism propaganda that is foisted on the American public, is done so that corporate America does not have to worry about the natives ever getting too restless. Joe and Madison. Yeah, I know. I know. And Jesse Richard, writing at TV News Lies. Jesse is the, I think he's the founder of TVNewsLies.org. And he writes, let's make one thing crystal clear. No member of the U.S. military contributes in any way whatsoever to protecting the freedoms of the American people. Now, that's Jesse's first sentence. And, you know, you don't need to go beyond that. That should pour sand in the gears of just about anybody who's reading it and make you stop for a second, unless you're a right-wing toad, in which case you go, oh, this goddamn commie! Jesse goes on, as a matter of fact, they, members of the U.S. military, are more likely to turn their weapons on you than they are to defend your constitutional rights. The only people on this planet who can affect your freedom are members of Congress, local legislators, and the members of enforcement institutions who will blindly follow the rulers who sign their paychecks. And while your beloved troops are murdering people around the globe, yes, I said murdering, your Congress and local legislators are eliminating your freedoms en masse without any intervention by our so-called protectors in the armed forces. Now, Jesse makes a very interesting point. You know, all the talk and all the reality, right, of First Amendment zones being established in this country. Supposing some tin horn dictator someplace that didn't have any oil in underneath the ground of his country. Supposing some tin horn dictator someplace decided to take over a reasonably representative government and established First Amendment zones. That'd be a reason for us to invade. I say a country that doesn't have any oil under its surface, because if it had oil under its surface, we'd invade anyway. We'd come up with something, right? But, you know, that kind of encapsulates it. Just think about it for a second. We live in a country now where the president, whether he does or not, he has the legal right to order the assassination of American citizens. How come the military isn't protecting us from that? We live in a country now where just damn near everything that is said via internet, telephone, wireless, whatever, is monitored, recorded, codified, sorted, observed. Why isn't the U.S. military protecting us from that? The right to peacefully assemble is being beat to hell with pepper spray and rifle butts and whips and not rifle butts, come on, Mike, truncheons and all kinds of things to beat people up and make them scream. Why isn't our military protecting us from that? We'll be right back.
for Radical Talk Radio. It's Mike Malloy.
So Jesse Richard writing at TVNewsLies.org talking about let's make one thing crystal clear: no member of the U.S. military contributes in any way whatsoever protecting the freedoms of the American people. But you know that is so true. He goes on to say, "There's no honor in volunteering to go anywhere in the world and kill anybody you are told to without question, without historical background, and without verifying the stated reasons for doing so." In this modern age of information, we now know that time and time again our military has been deployed into battle to kill and be killed for reasons that in no way, shape, or form resembles the reasons for which they or we were told at the time. This is no secret. Although many Americans refuse to take off the flag that is wrapped around their eyes and see American history as it really happened. The U.S. military, not once but twice, committed the single largest mass murder in history by dropping nuclear weapons on civilian populations, including, of course, women and children. Say what you want about how it helped end the war. The bottom line is the U.S. could have exploded these devices over uninhabited territory, blah, blah, blah. Time and again, we see that the people who make decisions to send troops to war are the very people who profit financially from such wars. Today's troops can see this. It's part of the public record. Yet they still do not question their missions. They join the military with the promise never to question orders. Taking history into account, I see no pride in this kind of service. And Jesse goes on, you can find this at TVNewsLies.org. It's a very good piece, and I, you know, so completely agree. And, you know, aside from just being plainly and clearly upset, I think last week I gave you over 200 examples of U.S. military intervention over the past 100 years. We are always at war. Always. We are at war now. In five or six different places. We are always, this country, England is not at war. Japan is not at war. Brazil is not at war, unless you know something I don't. But the United States is constantly at war, constantly. It never stops. And you need a steady conveyor belt of human bodies to take into the military and to train and to brainwash and to tell them, ooh, you're fighting for mom and apple pie and freedom and the flag. And, you know, the 18, 19, 20-year-olds who join buy into it because they have been so brainwashed by this culture. And the 25 and 20 and 30-year-olds who join because there is no alternative where it concerns a job or health insurance buy into it because, well, they suppress their common sense and say, look, I got to have a job, okay? I'll never get killed. I'll never have half my brain blown away, and I will never get PTSD. I know how to take care of myself. It's just, it's a shame. I mean, if we had the decency to refer to our military as what it is, it's a paid force of destruction. It is not a force that represents freedom, except for the corporatists who actually own it. It's not a force that represents defense of the country. I don't care what Obama or Bush or Clinton or anybody says. You know, when you invade Iraq, or you know, you're not defending American freedom. In fact, you're doing just the opposite. You know, when you invade Honduras and kill pregnant women and children, you're not defending freedom. You are being a rancid son of a bitch who represents the most vicious military machine in the history of the human race. So, let's maybe get that straight. Memorial Day has become that. It's become for me exactly what Labor Day has become. A joke, a farce, a lie, something that keeps the proles diverted with little jangly, dingly things. Now, I realize there are people who commit themselves to putting up white crosses and white stars of David or whatever to commemorate the dead, but let's remember how and why the dead died. And maybe there should be parallel cemeteries that contain the crescents and the whatever other religious symbol of the people who were murdered.
Ringing from the battle fire, the tired warrior aims a little higher. The black falcon or the little sparrow, the healing light or the flash of a barrel.
Hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So many things, scary things to talk about. This hour is being sponsored by Roy Runnings. His message, my religious friends never could answer my question about Noah and his three sons, Ham, Japheth, and Shem. According to the Bible, Ham, Japheth, and Shem only had male offspring. So, how did the human race manage to continue? Either incest or immaculate homosexuality. Their answer was always, you gotta have faith, not me. Keep up the good work, Roy. Yeah, we shouldn't even worry ourselves about somebody's ancient religious texts. Prairie 2 writes in, Romney made a huge show of going to Sin City to kiss the ring of the Donald again, despite George Will making a huge show of calling Trump a bloviating ignoramus. Notice I'm repeating huge show. It's because that's all they've got left. The irony of George Will calling anybody a bloviating ignoramus is the very definition of the pot calling the kettle black. The thing is that Mittens is falling so fast in the polls that the election could be rendered moot. Now only polling 35% nationwide, including averaging in states that never accepted the surrender of Lee as the final word on their secession from the Union. It's not so much that Obama's winning over the flat earth crowd, but rather they aren't going to vote in big numbers. The new millennial generation is going to vote, however. They are the biggest generation in sheer numbers ever, outstripping the baby boomers. They represent 2 million new voters a year and are motivated like no generation since the progressives of 100 years ago. This means that just between now and the election, nearly 1 million newly minted 18-year-old Americans will join Obama's forward movement. In short, Obama is gaining votes faster than Mitt Romney can commit verbal gaffes. The media are wallowing in super PAC money, so they aren't going to admit that it's all but over. And that's a good thing. If they weren't doing it just for the money, you could call them patriotic. Even call them the liberal media, as if there could be such a thing. If they keep the, quote, race close, end quote, despite all evidence to the contrary, they will produce a huge turnout of Democrats. This really could be a huge show. A huge shoe. as Ed Sullivan used to say. You getting worried at all about Fukushima and the Daiichi nuclear plant? I noticed over the past couple of days, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal are running articles about this rising danger. Now, I know a lot of people are minimizing the danger. Don't worry about it. Chernobyl was much worse. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. I like the headline on page 9 of Sunday's New York Times. Concerns grow about spent fuel rods at damaged nuclear plant in Japan. Boo! And then, of course, you've heard the news that cesium 130 whatever, 134, 137, 132, 130, is turning up in these huge half-ton blue fin tuna. And, but don't worry, you know, it's just, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Although the later reports now are saying as much as a 10 to 12% increase in so-called background radiation that would you would normally expect in bluefin tuna. I had no idea that we were to expect a certain level of radiation in bluefin tuna. Oh, I'm so stupid. I am so stupid. I had no idea. So what we are being told now by the establishment media, not the 25-cent talk shows, not the natural news websites. No, not those fringe groups. Nah. By the real news, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post. Concerns grow about what is lying in wait at Daiichi. You don't want to think about it. You just don't. Well, the part I can't get, how long ago did that tidal wave, earthquake and tsunami occur? 10, 12, 14 months, something like that. I don't know. Seems like forever ago. I still see some of those videos on YouTube and it just gives me the willies. Oh, my God. But however long ago it was, a new containment unit for these spent fuel rods has not been constructed. I don't even know that they've begun. And if not, why not? But I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe trying to build a new containment vessel is ridiculous. That the only thing they can do is continue the process of cleanup, which, according to New York Times, will take decades. Decades. What does that mean? 40 years? 30? And what happens if there is another earthquake right there on the rim of the Ring of Fire? What happens if there's another earthquake and or tsunami? Now, probably won't happen. You know, geologic time, 100 years is not even an eye blink. It's maybe a tenth of an eye blink. 20th, 1,000th. So in geologic time, maybe something is going to happen tomorrow, but tomorrow is, you know, 500 years away. You know, that's the fun thing about tectonic plate movement. You just can't be sure when it's going to happen. Go ahead, laugh, you idiot. I don't know what else to do but laugh. I don't know what else to do. I really don't. The bluefin tuna that are showing up now in the Eastern Pacific, it reminds me of a place we went to one time in Vieques, Puerto Rico, island off Puerto Rico, called Mosquito Bay. It's a bioluminescent bay. And we went out in glass-bottom kayaks, or plastic bottom, not glass. And It's one of the few places on Earth where the bioluminescence is so pronounced that every time anything moves, including your paddle or a stingray or a shark or whatever, you look down into the water and you see all this light, all these movements. And, of course, it's bioluminescent. It's not radioactive. But when I read this over the weekend about the bluefin tuna and started hearing about this, I thought, oh, my God. What happens when they start glowing? Of course, they'll be dead before they glow. It's just kind of it's kind of scary, isn't it? I mean, do you get worried about this at all? Or do you use the same device that most of us use? Avoidance, denial. I'm not going to worry about that. I got to find a job. I understand that. There are certain things that are just too big. Just way too big. And to consider them is to get just a little bit too close, for me anyway, to the wind shear of insanity. Just can't do it. I'd rather focus on this bit with Donald Trump and Mitt Romney. Jesus. Donald Trump. I mean, you know, he's at it again about the birther thing. Nothing's changed my mind. I walk down the street and people are screaming, please don't give that up. Trump is the most toxic, narcissistic son of a bitch ever, isn't he? I mean, I can't think of anybody who is this insane, that has this kind of an image about every time he farts or burps or has a thought, the world comes to a standstill. What is it, Donald? Did you fart? Hey, Donald farted! Everybody, hey, woo! Pay attention! Man! And Romney, you know, this Prairie too is right. Romney is such a dumbass. Romney tried to compartmentalize Trump's fundraising prowess as separate and apart from his horse crap accusations. Romney said, you know, I don't agree with all the people to support me, and my guess is they don't all agree with everything I believe in. But I need to get 50.1% or more, and I'm appreciative to have the help of a lot of good people. You know, Romney would take the support of a mass murderer. You know, I need 50.1%, so, you know, if it comes from Trump, I don't care. It's our turn. You know, my wife is a dressage rider. Did you read the thing in the Times? My wife has this guy travels with her. He teaches her dressage, how to ride a horse with those little fairy steps. You know, isn't that nice? Huh? Yeah, I'm Mitt Romney. I sure am.
Day Screaming with Mike Malone.
10 before the... Whoops. Sound like a frog was trying to say that. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Roy Runnings, whose message, my religious friends never could answer my question about Noah and his three sons, Ham, Japheth, and Shem. According to the Bible, these three only had male offspring. So how did the human race manage to continue? Either incest or immaculate homosexuality. Their answer was always, you got to have faith there, Roy. Not me. Keep up the good work, Roy. Thanks, Roy. Yeah, there are all sorts of mysteries like that. So many of them come back to sex and incest and...
Yeah.
Radioactive bluefin tuna. A Across the vast Pacific, the mighty bluefin tuna carried radioactive contamination that leaked from Japan's crippled nuclear plant to the shores of the United States 6,000 miles away. The first time a huge migrating fish has been shown to carry radioactivity such a distance. Nicholas Fisher, that's his name, one of the researchers reporting the findings online Monday in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, said, quote, "We were frankly kind of startled." How are you kind of startled? I mean, you either are or you aren't. Apparently, the levels of the radioactive cesium were 10 times higher. Not 10% higher, 10 times higher. 1,000% more than normal measured in tuna off the California coast in previous years. But even so, not to fear, that amount, according to the U.S. and Japanese governments, that amount is still far below the safe-to-eat limits set by the governments of Japan and the United States. Previously, smaller fish and plankton were found with elevated levels of radiation in Japanese water. But scientists did not expect the nuclear fallout to linger in huge fish that sail the world because such fish can metabolize and shed radioactive substances. Ooh, well then, what does that mean? Anyway, the team that tested the bluefin tuna found that tissue samples taken from all 15 tuna captured contained levels of cesium-134 and cesium-137. All of them.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Hundreds of thousands of out-of-work Americans are receiving their final unemployment checks. Hundreds of thousands of out-of-work Americans are receiving their final unemployment checks sooner than they expected, the Times reports, even though Congress had renewed extended benefits till the end of the year. Remember that? You see, the checks are stopping for the people who have the most difficulty finding work, the long-term unemployed. More than 5 million people have been out of work for longer than half a year. And federal benefit extensions were intended to tide over the unemployed until the job market improved. In February, when the program was ready to expire, remember, Congress renewed it, but also phased in a reduction in the number of weeks of extended aid and effectively made it more difficult for states to qualify for the maximum aid. This is what the Republicans do, and this is what Obama signed off on. Since then, the jobless in 23 states have lost up to 5 months' worth of benefits. And next month is going to be rough. An additional 70,000 people will lose benefits earlier than they presumed, bringing the number of people cut off prematurely this year to 500,000. Florida is particularly being stomped on. The Republicans made a determination, Truth Seekers, and I hope you're aware of this. The Republicans made a determination that they were going to destroy the United States. Now, they made this determination not because they're Republicans, but because they do what they are told to do by their corporate masters. The capitalists who own every single Republican and probably 70% of the Democrats in the Congress gave the instructions very clearly. Destroy the middle class. Destroy it. Utterly and completely. Destroy it. And once it's destroyed, And then we will go ahead and start manufacturing in this country again. Only we are going to pay $12, $13, $14 an hour. So do what you are told, you right-wing little toads, or we will smash you. And, of course, they do exactly what they're told. Republicans do exactly what they are told to do. The ones in office and the ones not in office. When we come back, did you know that we are putting U.S. troops in North Korea? You didn't hear about this one, huh? Okay. Well, stick around. It is 7 past the hour. Here on the Malloy program, before we get to the North Korea thing, Sean wrote in, Mike, the vulture in the wild performs an important ecological function by scavenging. And vulture capitalism is not referring to scavenging dead corporations. I prefer the term parasite capitalism, as it refers more accurately to what Mitt Romney did at, for example, Bain Capital. The parasite capitalist regards that if the host or the victim sickens and dies, well, that's icing on the cake. As the parasite capitalist knows, they have taken all they can from the host or the victim. Parasite capitalism only benefits the parasite capitalists. It is a liability to the rest of society. It is not classical capitalism that can benefit society. Well, I get what you're saying, Sean, but I disagree with the last part of what you said. Capitalism may benefit the upper classes in the short term, but eventually capitalism is not just an economic system that has no benefit for the lower classes. It is also the system that is actively destroying life, everything. Capitalism. It is. But try telling that to the average American. The U.S. military today vehemently denied a media report that special forces had been parachuted into North Korea on intelligence-gathering missions. Current Affairs magazine The Diplomat quoted Brigadier General Neil Talley. It's an American, commander of special forces in South Korea, as saying that soldiers from the U.S. and South Korea had been dropped across the border for, quote, special reconnaissance missions, end quote. But Colonel Jonathan Withington, a public affairs officer at U.S. Forces Korea, said some reporting of the conference had been taken completely out of context. Yeah. The colonel said, quote, quotes have been made up and attributed to him, end quote. And he denied that any U.S. or South Korean forces had parachuted into the North. In a statement, he said, quote, though special reconnaissance is the core Special Operations Force mission, at no time have Special Operation Forces been sent to the North to conduct special reconnaissance. Really? Trust me. I'm in the military. I added that last part. The magazine The Diplomat quoted General Neil Talley as saying that the North had built thousands of tunnels since the Korean War. And the magazine reported him as saying at a press conference in Florida last week, quote, the entire tunnel infrastructure is hidden from our satellites, so we send South Korean soldiers and U.S. soldiers to the North to do special reconnaissance, end quote. According to the magazine, General Talley said commandos parachute in with minimal supplies to watch the tunnels undetected. And at least four of the tunnels built by the North Koreans go under the demilitarized zone separating North and South, Talley was reported as saying. He added, quote, we don't know how many we don't know about, end quote. So there you have it. The general speaks out of turn, and he is corrected by a colonel. Ooh-ooh. Goodbye, Mr. General. Well, brigadier is what, one star? Isn't that just above a colonel? You know, a brigadier general is, he's not even a general. He's a colonel plus. So look for General Neil Talley. They'll give it a couple of weeks, and then there'll be a little blurb published someplace. Brigadier General Neil Talley, after a 37-year career in the United States Army, decided to retire today, saying that he wanted to spend more time with his family. Of course he will. Of course he will. What else? Oh, there's just so many fascinating things here to talk about. So many fascinating things to talk about. This is kind of an interesting email I got from Scott. I think it's from Scott. Let me take a look here. Yeah, it's from Scott. He's a trucker. We're going to open up the phone lines here in a couple of minutes. I think they're open now if you want to call in. 800-996-2556. But Scott writes, hello, Mike. I drive an 18-wheeler out of Greer, South Carolina, and I enjoy listening to your show as I drive across the Texas desert at night. It is 3 a.m., and I'm at the big petrol truck stop in Laredo, Texas, just now. Mike, I'm a libertarian, so you and I don't see eye to eye on everything, but I do enjoy getting your views on President Obama. This man is a warmonger. It is astonishing to me how liberals give this guy a pass on the Afghanistan war. If a Republican were managing the Afghan disaster, just like Obama is, there would be 500,000 people demonstrating in the streets. I listen to Chris Matthews every day, and he acts like I listen to Chris Matthews and Ed Schultz every day, and they act like Obama walks on water. Never hear a peep out of them in criticism of Obama's war policies. Well, let me just add something here to your email or comment, Scott. They're not allowed to, okay? They're not allowed to be critical of Obama's policies. Trust me on that. They're not allowed to say anything critical. Mike, I grew up in Atlanta and turned 18 in late 1968. They say that nothing clarifies the mind like a good hanging. Well, second on the list, nothing clarifies the mind like getting your draft card in the mail. I got mine in January of 69. Began studying the Vietnam War to see if I wanted to participate. After all, six of my buddies from Chamblee High School were in the Marines fighting in Vietnam. I studied the speeches of Johnson and Nixon, and I studied Ho Chi Minh. First, I realized that we would lose the war. Nixon was already saying that he would withdraw troops. If you're the invader and the war is a stalemate, once you begin to withdraw troops, it's a given that you will lose. If the war was so important, why would we withdraw troops? Was I going to be the last guy to get his legs blown off in a lost cause? Didn't sound too good. Worse, I learned that the war was misbegotten and that the domino theory was a lie. I learned that Lyndon Johnson had been elected as a peace candidate in 64 versus warmonger Goldwater when Johnson lied and said American boys ought not to get sent to do the job that Vietnamese boys should do. And Nixon lied in the 68 campaign when he said, I have a plan to end the war in 18 months. The men are elected on a promise for peace, but when they get into office, they send the boys off to die, and they kill untold thousands of the natives, whether enemy or by collateral damage. So I decided to stay at Georgia State and play soccer, smoke pot, and get to know the co-eds, and stay the hell out of NAM. Plan B was to go to Canada. And plan C was federal prison, because no way in hell I was going to Vietnam. I am Irish, Scotch, and Welsh, and we Celts are stubborn, hard to get us to do something we don't want to do. Since the Vietnam era, I have been appalled to see my country go into war upon war. I have a very jaundiced eye when I hear politicians or generals talk about how great the upcoming war will be, because I know they all lie. Grenada, Panama, Gulf One, Afghanistan, Iraq, hell, I can't even keep up with them all. There's a little bit more here. Let's take a break, and I'll come back and share with you the rest of Scott's email. Phone lines are open! 877-996-2556.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I'm sharing with you an email from Scott, who drives an 18-wheeler out of Greer, South Carolina. And right before the break, he was talking about what he did during the Vietnam era. He said, I decided to stay in Georgia at Georgia State University, which is in downtown Atlanta, play soccer, smoke pot, get to know the co-eds, and stay the hell out of NAM. He goes on to say, the United States in my adult lifetime has been the greatest warmonger on the planet. In fact, I have developed a flow chart to figure out if we will go to war. Ask this of the targeted country. 1. Are the people dark-skinned? 2. Are they non-Christians? 3. Are they not in possession of nukes? If you get 3 yes answers, bombs away! I voted for Obama as much as anything to give an F.U. to President Cheney and his simpleton lackey Bush. Here again, a man who ran as the peace candidate is now the warmonger. The only reason Obama beat Hillary is because he supposedly, in 2002, as an obscure state legislator, was against the Iraq War. Yet he gets into office and there is war without end. And as bad as Obama is, the fool Romney would put 40,000 troops back into Iraq and probably would stay in Afghanistan for 2 more decades. He's a lot worse than Obama. So what's wrong with our country? Keep up the good work, Mike. I will keep listening. Scott. P.S. As if I didn't enjoy your program already, I heard you discussing stropharia and cow manure. You said like moi. Yeah, baby. Mike, you're a man after my own heart. I picked many a one in Central Georgia when I was in college, and man, how the doors of perception opened. Damn, I love those things. What's not to love? I sometimes wonder what would happen if the whole United States, or at least, all right, let me rephrase it. If everybody in the Republican Party leadership all did psilocybin mushrooms at the same time, and you know how seriously they would continue talking their nonsense when they finally straightened out, right? Chris Hedges had another great piece. This one is The War on Gays. And he quotes gay activist and pastor Mel White. Now, Mel White, who ghostwrote books for Jerry Falwell and a bunch of these Christian right sons of bitches before he came out and... you know, he's had a husband and partner for 30 years. His name's Gary Nixon. And the two of them founded something called Soul Force. It's an organization committed to using nonviolent resistance to end religion-based oppression. Mel White and hundreds of Soul Force volunteers protest outside mega churches that preach this hatred and bigotry in the name of religion. White travels to communities where young gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender people have committed suicide. And when he gets there, he holds memorial services for them in front of the church doors. And he accuses, and rightly so, the pastors of these churches. He accuses them of murder. Mel White, more than perhaps any other preacher in the country, has pulled young men and women back from the brink of despair. White is scared. Now, he refers to Dharan Ravi. Dharan Ravi was convicted for the hateful abuse that may have driven his roommate at Rutgers, Tyler Clementi, to commit suicide. You remember that that story, that case? Put him on a webcam, taped it, and put it out on YouTube. And the young kid, Tyler Clementi, committed suicide, and there's been a trial. And I think Dharan Ravi was found guilty of something and sentenced to 30 days or less. And Mel White asked the question, what kind of environment creates a Dharan Ravi who would carry out that kind of bullying, as well as what kind of environment creates a kid like Tyler who would become a victim of that kind of bullying? Let's take a look at this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, Mel White, a gay activist and a pastor, and an author, and has a partner, married, has a partner, husband of 30 years. He wants to know what kind of environment creates Darwin Ravi, who would carry out the kind of bullying, as well as a kid like Tyler who would become a victim of that kind of bullying. And he says that at the heart of all this is the church, of course. He says that not just Ravi should be convicted, the churches should be convicted. Ravi, who was convicted, is just an extension of the hatred that people feel about this so-called gay threat. Pope Benedict the 16th should be on trial. Richard Land from the Southern Baptist should be on trial. Religious leaders, Protestant and Catholic, should be on trial. They made this happen. But as usual, too few Americans make the connection. Now, Mel White applauds Obama for taking a personal stand for marriage equality, but he notes that Obama's statement, and this really pisses me off about Obama, was the statement was accompanied by a reiteration that states have the right to determine their own policies toward marriage. States, in other words, Mr. President, right, have a right to determine their own policies toward unconstitutional denial of rights to people having to be gay. You'd think Obama, having a black parent and a white parent, would understand that. The ridiculousness of that statement. Well, the states have a right to make a decision. Why didn't they give George Wallace the right to do that, make his own decisions? Right? Mel White went on to say, married gays in the military are miserable. They can get married, but they can't have any of the rights of other married military members, including housing or travel. And White says that class difference is at the heart of understanding sexism and homophobia. He says class difference is based on sexism. It is based on homophobia. It's based on men who want to stay in power. And men who want to stay in power go to church. They sit in the front pews. They act generous and loving and faithful. They give away a tiny little bit to keep these churches going. Which is the reason, Mel White says, I stand with the Occupy movement. At least I know I'm with people who will be on my side. And he talks about living in Lynchburg, Virginia, Mel White does, which is where Jerry Falwell had his, it still has, that's the headquarters of his poisonous, filthy organizations. Mel says, when I moved to Lynchburg, it was a blue city. In spite of Liberty University being there, White says, we had an amazing progressive woman, Shannon Valentine, as our state representative. She visited our home. We had a progressive mayor and a progressive city council, but in 2008, everything went to hell. Our new attorney general, Ken Cuccinelli, is crazy. He talks about putting cameras up vaginas. We had so many possibilities until 2008. Then it suddenly ended. Unfortunately, more and more of this is reflected across the country. And Mel White says, the reversal came with the collapse of our financial system. Suddenly, everything blue was seen as costing too much money, including helping the poor. There was a revolt led by Fox News and its allies. It's difficult to find a restaurant or bar in Lynchburg that isn't playing Fox News. People quote Fox as though Fox is the arbiter of truth. In fact, Fox is the enemy. And he says people who disseminate this culture of hate in this country, right-wing candidates, you know, they use these issues, as you know, whenever there's a financial trouble. Look what happened in Germany in the 30s, in the 20s and 30s. But that's the perfect breeding ground. That's the Petri dish. And White says, they used this against Shannon Valentine, the representative, state representative from his district. He said the lies against her were heinous, But the Christian right is convinced that if you have to, if you have a call to save the nation, you're allowed to lie because the ends justify the means. Falwell lied on a regular basis. So we lost Shannon Valentine. We lost so much that was good about our state after that election, 2008. And this is true almost everywhere. Well, he goes on, and at the very end he says, "Too many of my sisters and brothers in the gay community don't seem to understand the power of religion. They've been rejected by religion. They hate the idea of religion. Therefore, they're not going to deal with religion, which is fatal, because religion is the heart of homophobia. Without religion, there would be no homophobia. What other source of homophobia is there? But six verses in the Bible. When Bible literalists preach that LGBT people are going to hell, they become Christian terrorists. They use fear as their weapon, like all terrorists. They're seeking to deny our religious and civil rights. They threaten to turn our democracy into a fundamentalist theocracy. And if we don't reverse the trend, there's a very real possibility that in the end, we will all be governed according to their perverted version of biblical law." You know, that I think that, more so than any political reason, would cause me, Mike Malloy, to, when the barricades go up, willingly take my place on the progressive side of those barricades. The disgust and contempt, and yes, hatred that I feel for these organized religions, the damage that they've done, the damage they continue to do. Oh, well. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy. Hello, Jeremy. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry, Mike. I had you on mute.
Hey.
Hey. Just calling because I'm a little disturbed by people's optimism into our little adventures in wars in other countries and how we create peace everywhere we go.
Yeah.
When quite often we're the ones that are propping up the dictators that hold down their own people.
Isn't that the truth?
It's the truth. I say this because I got into a big discussion with my mom's husband this weekend, and he works for General Dynamics. So he's in the weapons industry.
Mm-hmm.
So he likes to see a rosy side to all of this, even though clear and cut, we're usually the aggressors in things that have nothing to do with us.
Right.
I told him, it's usually strictly a business decision. What's best for our business is why we do it. Not for their people or our people.
Right.
And, of course, he doesn't like to see it that way. And he tried to say, well, if you look at our vast history, we've done more good than we've done evil.
But that's not true, is it?
No, I'm disgusted by that fact. And I said, it's not true. I told him, we've done things as heinous as the Nazis have done, time and time again.
Yeah, we just didn't do it in a systematized way. But we have butchered easy 6 million.
Well, easy. I mean, the American Indians, Native Americans, sorry. Them, the Japanese, we stopped short of getting rid of them in World War II. Just a list of different things.
Right.
I even asked him that question about how many wars do you think we've been in since, what was that, 1901 or something like that?
Yeah.
And they both looked at me and they said, oh, three or four. And they kind of laughed it off. And I told them how many there was. And they said, well, again, it was more good than evil and all those things.
You know, it's a shame. It's a shame that people have that as their reality-based idea of wars the United States have been involved in. We've been involved in over 200 military actions in the past 100 years. You might point that out to them. Some of them repeat instances, like I don't know how many times we've invaded countries in Central America. And I can't think of any that were really, truly, absolutely, with no equivocation, about freedom and protecting the American people.
I can't think of a whole lot of them in this. The Memorial Day thing is so blown out of proportion, and that freedom isn't free, and people die for our freedom.
I know.
It's so far from the truth, it just disgusts me.
I know.
And this is coming from someone who was military prior to all these things happening in recent history.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's all I get to say. I was kind of annoyed.
I hear you, Jeremy. Thanks a lot, pal. I'm glad you checked in.
Sure.
All right, take care. Yeah, it's, you know, every country has their mythologies. There's no question about that. But this idea of all the good that we have done with our bombs and bullets and nuclear weapons is just madness.
Right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Doug is in Beaver Dam, Arizona, listening on XM. Hello, Doug.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good. How are you?
Well, I'm just kind of disappointed in the way you just keep back-talking Obama and you keep putting him down.
Yeah, why?
Well, because, you know, I voted for him, too.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? Think of the alternative. What do we got?
Well, this election we have Romney apparently.
Yeah,
but I can't I can't do it that way anymore, Doug. I can't say, well, look at the alternative. I voted for Obama because I kind of hoped that he would be the kind of leader that we needed, and it turns out that in so many areas, especially where it concerns civil liberties in this country, he's worse than Bush. So I'm sorry.
Oh, come on.
Did Bush authorize the killing of American citizens?
No.
Did Obama?
He authorized the killing of 4,000 American citizens.
Did Obama authorize the targeted assassination of American citizens?
You know what? The guy's got, he takes a drone, he puts some people out.
No, Doug, now wait a second, Doug. In all fairness here, I ask you a question. I ask you two questions. Did George W. Bush authorize the extrajudicial assassination of American citizens? The answer is no. Did Barack Obama authorize the extrajudicial assassination of American citizens? The answer is yes.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Can you vote for someone who is that blatant? All he had to do, all Obama had to do, was not sign the NDAA with that in it. And he signed it anyway. Now, all I would ask you to do is to tell me if you think that that constitutes a proper action on the part of a president of the United States to absolutely destroy the First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, and I don't know how many more, and just say, okay, if I decide that such and such a person is a threat to the United States, I'm going to have him killed, period. Now, are you okay with that?
I am. I really am.
Okay. Well, then the only thing I can say, Doug, and I'm going to move on, is that I can't talk to someone like you because, to me, that, I mean, I don't know what you call that, pal. I call it dictatorial. I call it fascist. I call it destroying the Constitution. If you're comfortable with that, then okay. You know, that's up to you. I can't do that. I have enough respect for the idea of the rule of law, which apparently you don't. And I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying that as a definition of what you just said, or as a part of the definition of what you just said. You do not respect the rule of law. You do not respect the idea of justice. You do not respect the idea of trial by jury. You do not respect reining in the powers of the presidency. Now, if Obama can do it, now that he signed it into law, what do you suppose will happen when someone who would not use that power as judiciously, if that's the right word, as Obama? What happens if somebody gets into office who decides that you don't deserve the protections of the Constitution? So I'm sorry, pal. If you believe it's okay on the say-so of one person, the president, to order someone assassinated, an American citizen assassinated, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I don't think that's what the idea of this country is supposed to be about. Maybe it is. Maybe that's what we're supposed to be. Maybe that's what we're supposed to be. But I can't agree with it, pal. If you're comfortable with it, okay. Ricky is in Decatur, Georgia. Hello, Ricky.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Just fine. I would just like to know what you think about the hypocrisy of the U.S. military. You know, we had this soldier shooting up a house full of innocent people in Afghanistan, and you have four soldiers crapping, pissing, and urinating all over bodies of dead bodies of Taliban soldiers, and then you have people such as Dana Loesch advocating, cheering on, defending, and supporting that kind and type of behavior.
Yeah, well, my attitude about all that, Ricky, has to do with my attitude about U.S. aggression and imperialism and the national security state that we all live in now. And I think doing those sorts of things is just an outgrowth of the attitude that U.S. governments, Democratic and Republican, have had for a number of years. We literally say, you know, piss on the enemy. We decide who the enemy is, and we say piss on him. And we do. After we kill them, we piss on them. So I don't know. I don't know how else to answer the question except to say that it's disgusting. But that's who we are, Ricky. Gotta go, pal. Thank you. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Ben is in Buena Park, California. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I wanted to ask you and follow up on that you talked about. Was it an extrajudicial execution of an American?
Right.
Is that what you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, the American Muslim guy who was targeted and killed by, I think, a drone missile in someplace in the Middle East. I forget the particulars now, yeah. But Obama or any president now has the power for individual targeted assassinations.
That would be outside of the country, right?
Or inside.
I beg to differ with you on that because, first off, with the Constitution, you know, it guarantees all those rights in the Constitution are guaranteed to anyone who is subject to the laws and jurisdiction of this country. Isn't that right?
Why are we holding so many people in Guantanamo and we won't bring them to trial?
Was that my answer? Was that an answer to the question? The question.
No, no, that's your answer. Why isn't Bradley Manning given a trial?
They would assert that they're in due process, that their due process is just a little longer than what we would consider.
No, they're not being given due process.
Okay, but now
let me ask you a question, Ben. The people who have been held without charge for 7 years in an American prison in Guantanamo. Now, do you consider that part of our Constitution?
No.
Okay. Well, then what's your argument? I don't know what your point is.
Well, because my point is, first off, those actions, I don't think that those are necessarily directly responsible to Barack Obama. But I wanted to make something
I don't think that's the point. Barack Obama has been president for almost the past 4 years, and he had the power to order these people into our court system. If they've been charged with something, they haven't been charged with anything. So it is Obama's responsibility. Or when do you think Obama's responsibilities kick in?
I'm saying that Barack Obama, it would be nice to think that he could close, let's say, Guantanamo.
I'm not asking you that. Guantanamo, Guantanamo. I'm saying that we are holding people without charge that we've been holding for 6 or 7 years. And they're being held by us and indefinitely. Do you consider that to be part of the Constitution of the United States? That's all I'm asking you.
No.
Okay, well then where is that power coming from? If it's not part of the Constitution, where is it coming from?
I'm glad you've asked that. Because there, right now as we speak, there's some issues. There is something happening in South Dakota right now in our country.
Okay, but wait just a second. Before you get to that, Ben, you're leading me around here by the nose, and I don't particularly care for that. You brought this issue up, and I'm trying to pin you down to an answer. If you don't call what's going on in Guantanamo, in certain cases where people have been held for 7, 8, 9 years without a charge, without a trial, when the Constitution guarantees a speedy trial, if that's not in the Constitution, then where is that power coming from?
Now, let me explain. First off, we were talking about the American citizen that had been abroad. That had been, as you say.
Well, no, anyone that we glom up is subject to our law, right?
I'm about to say, it's going to just say it'd be the same way. Makes no difference what you say. This is what it is.
Well, no. Wait. I'm not going to get into this kind of an argument. I'm in no mood to argue. We're talking about the law, I think. Either we're a nation of laws or we're not. And my question to you is, if, you know, you're trying to defend Obama by saying that he doesn't have any, it's not his responsibility or whatever it is you're trying to say, where it concerns these prisoners that have been held for years without even any charges. And my question to you is, if these people are being held in a manner that is not in line with the U.S. Constitution, and they're being held by us under our system, then where does the power to hold them come from?
Let me answer in the words of, I think it was Chief Justice Cardoza. If it's justice you wanted in this life, you won't get it.
Okay, thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate it. You finally got to it. If the idea is there's no justice in our system, and you quote a Supreme Court justice regarding that, I don't know if the quote is true or not, but if that's the case, then why call me with some little picayune point about Obama? If there's no justice, well, then what's the point of your phone call? I mean, I'm sorry, pal, you lost me. I don't mean to be stupid to you or act like a bully, but good Lord. I just don't know how to respond. I really don't. But I appreciate you checking in. I really do. Bada bing, bada boom. What else we got here? Oh, yeah, this is kind of weird. Somebody sent this to me. Irish Dave, who is a frequent contributor to this program in more ways than one. Irish Dave sent me an email. It says, Mike, I know, this is a week old, but in celebration of our Dia de Muertos de Guerra, it seems somehow fitting. And the story is Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has appointed someone who's to oversee the state's parks the state's forests and other public held property, on which hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites, particularly in the northern part of the state, go to do their deer hunting. And as the article says, hunters on public land may be surprised to discover that Governor Walker regards their annual trek into a state forest as a radical left-wing activity akin to marching in a May Day parade in Red Square. That's right. Now, Wisconsinites love, according to Wonkat.com, if there's one thing Wisconsinites love, we are told, it's murdering poor defenseless little Bambi with a gun. Democrats love shooting Bambi. Republicans love shooting Bambi. Independents and children and ladies and men all love shooting Bambi. Sometimes for food, sometimes to preserve their public lands from deer overpopulation, sometimes to have dominion over all God's beasts or something. And this is the most bipartisan thing there could possibly be in Wisconsin, and that is killing deer. So what did hero Governor Scott Walker do? He appointed as the state's deer czar a guy named Dr. James Kroll, who thinks public management of public lands is, quote, the last bastion of communism, end quote. Quoted in a newspaper there, the public lands Kroll despises include the state park, state national forest, and other publicly held property that hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites rely on for deer hunting. If Kroll gets his way, public land hunters will get the shaft. The deer herd no longer would be managed as a public resource, but as the private property of wealthy landowners. In other words, Wisconsin now is scheduled to become like Europe, where hunting is the privilege of the wealthy. Are you listening to this? More on this when we come back. You know, killing the king's deer.
You'll see him in your head on the TV screen. Hey, buddy, I'm warning you to turn it on. Oh, he's a ghost, he's a god, he's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red rat.
you ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
Second time today.
21 past the hour. So this guy, James Kroll, who is now the Wisconsin's Deer Czar, according to OneCat.com, Kroll, who has been the foremost proponent of deer ranching in Texas for more than 30 years, doesn't mind the controversy and certainly doesn't fade in the heat. People who call for more public lands are what he calls cocktail conservationists, who are really demanding socialism. He calls national parks wildlife ghettos and flatly accuses the government of gross mismanagement. He argues that his relatively tiny acreage, marked by 8-foot fences and posted signs warning off would-be poachers, is a better model for keeping what's natural, natural, while making money off the land. I understand he wants to charge $700 or something like that for a license to go kill deer. And in the meantime, take all that public land and do with it what is supposed to, what's supposed to be done with it. Give it to capitalists. A bunch of goddamn trees sitting out there and lakes and rivers and open land owned by the national government or the state government is crazy. That's communism. Rip the goddamn stuff up. Tear it to pieces. Put some mining shafts in there, for heaven's sake. Let's get some fracking going. We need some oil in this country. Let's start drilling. Public lands, national parks, state parks. What in the hell kind of communism has slipped into Wisconsin? I'll tell you what, you people in Wisconsin, if you retain this freak as governor, I hope that you just suffer the tortures of the damned. Now, I realize that a lot of decent people will suffer too, but hey, that's the way it goes, right? That's the way it goes. Imagine people now who want to go hunt for deer to chop them up and put them in their freezer because they need the protein that comes from the deer meat because they don't have a decent job. And now this deer czar is going to tell you, well, that's enough of that. You right-wing voters, you're just so crazy. You're just so ignorant. You're just so willing to cut your own throats and gurgle while you bleed. Man, I don't get it. Oh, well. James is in the Mojave Valley, Arizona area. Hello, James.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I was just listening to you talk to the gentleman before me.
Uh-huh.
And you were talking about, well, why are they being confined? Well, they're enemy combatants.
What's an enemy combatant?
Someone who has been captured on the battlefield.
What,
and that's where,
but what battlefield, and where does the term enemy combatant come from? Show it to me in any kind of military manual ever published in the United States.
We'll change it from enemy combatant to prisoner
of war. Wait a second.
You're using, that's what they are.
You're using enemy combatant. Where does that term come from?
I have no idea.
Well, let me tell you where it comes from, James. It was an invented term made up by the Bush crime family. That anybody that was wandering around in Afghanistan or Yemen or any place on earth where we wanted to have a military presence and this person looked suspicious, they didn't have a uniform, they weren't carrying a weapon, they're just walking around in regular Afghan clothes. Well, they were labeled an enemy combatant and scooped up. Now, do you think that's right?
Well, the question is,
the question is, do you think that's right?
Yes, I do, because they're...
Okay, well, thank you, James. I appreciate it. If you think that's right, then you have no problem with someone coming out and scooping your ass up and putting you in indefinite detention. Right? Now, he can't answer because I hung up. I don't know why I'm getting an abundance of people tonight who want to tell me it's okay to use the Constitution as bathroom tissue. I don't know what's wrong with you people tonight. Either we are a nation of laws or we are not. But you're not going to have it both ways. An enemy combatant is not a real term. There is no such thing. A prisoner of war is a prisoner of war. That's someone taken in a situation where the United States military is operating against another military. And there's a war. A war on terror means that the U.S. military can go into Iceland or the U.K. and pick somebody out and say, he's an enemy combatant, take him to Guantanamo. You people better get your asses straight and your minds on what you're talking about here, because you're the ones who are driving this country right into these open arms of fascism. You know that? You really, really are.
To the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
Bear respect to the powers that be today.
25 before the hour, Dennis is in Santa Fe listening on KTRC. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm excellent.
Good.
But it feels like you've been running the gong show tonight, so I'm going to try not to get gonged too fast. So I want to talk a little bit more about Obama.
Okay.
Now, first of all, let me say I agree with the things you've been saying. Is it murder when we drive our little drone over and we kiss somebody? Yes. Is it a violation of the Constitution when it's a U.S. citizen? Yes. No question. So I agree. Here's my deal. Like in the 80s, I was in and out of Central America trying to stop us from murdering people down there.
Right.
Salvador, Nicaragua. 1990, I was in Iraq trying to stop that war from happening. So my history is that these wars, Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, they were run by the Republicans.
Right.
And so like tens and maybe, tens of thousands of people and thousands that I knew died and were maimed because of Republican policies.
Right.
Now, same in Iraq. The fact is, And in terms of murder, not only do I think it's murder when we drive our little drones over and kill people, I believe it's also murder when we lie a country into war.
Sure.
And so my feeling is that both the first and the second Gulf War were both the United States being intentionally lied into war by Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at it and say, I know that, conservatively, 1 million Iraqis died between the first and second Gulf War. I think that's probably low.
Right.
But those people would not have died, some of which I met, knew, shook their hands, sat around with them and had tea, if it hadn't been for Republicans being in office.
Right.
And so my argument is a proportional argument, which I know sucks. I mean, I understand there's I'm sitting here saying something I have trouble with, but I say, okay, the Republicans in my life have killed a couple million people,
mm-hmm.
surely 1 million that would not have been dead if the lousy Democrats had been in office. And I feel it's the same. So, yes, do I think that Obama murders people when he does that with his drone? Yes, he does. But do I think that 1 million people would be alive if we hadn't had Republicans in office during my lifetime? Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I am. I'm glad I didn't get gonged yet.
Anyway. Well, no, but that, my argument is not proportional murder or proportional death. I've gotten a couple of emails from people whose opinions I respect here who are trying to point out to me that Obama ordering the targeted assassination of one American citizen is, if one chooses to raise that as an issue, kind of a joke, given the fact that all presidents do this sort of thing. Lyndon Johnson and Dick Nixon were responsible for the deaths of 3 million Indochinese and 56,000 or 58,000 Americans. Harry Truman was responsible for the deaths of 56,000 Americans in South Korea and God knows how many Koreans. That wasn't my point, though. My point was, if we have a president who, by the way, was claimed to be a constitutional scholar, who takes it upon himself to sign into law a rule that gives him or any president the right to completely step outside of any form of accepted standards of justice and order somebody murdered. Is that what we're about? I'm not arguing proportional killing. I'm not arguing the fact that all presidents do it and have done it. I'm not even arguing the horror of living in a country that professes one thing, that's us, and does another. So that's not, I have no problem with what you're saying. The two or three callers I've had tonight, though, who are trying to make the point that this is somehow acceptable. And to me, okay, maybe it is acceptable. If it is, then let's stop playing games with the U.S. Constitution and saying that we're a nation of laws when we, in fact, are not. So with Johnson, with Obama signing the NDAA, and I don't care what kind of signing statement he put with it, that signing statement has the force of law about as much as a cup of warm tea. So it is now law that a president can order the targeted assassination of an American citizen with no judicial review, no charge, formal charge, no presentation of evidence, and no chance to defend himself in court.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree completely with everything you said. I think poor old Doug, when you were talking to him, I think he just got a little confused. He was going to try to say about the 4,000. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, do I think that we are? We have, you know, the way you described it was perfect. Yes, we are past even pretending to live within the Constitution.
Right.
I think that's true. And I'm just saying I am justifying the fact that I'm still going to vote for Obama because I think less people will die. But everything you said, you know, if I got to be sitting on the new Nuremberg trials, these guys, there'd be a long list.
Well, that's the other thing that I've mentioned on this program before. It is, ever since we decided to invade Iraq, we have declared that what occurred subsequent to the trials at Nuremberg was, in fact, judicial murder.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, and what occurred as a result of the trials in Tokyo Harbor were judicial murder. They were not justice. If Bush and Cheney and their cohort can do exactly, maybe once again we're into proportions, maybe not to the degree that Hitler and his minions do, but to invade a country when Justice Jackson said that that kind of action, international action, is the worst of all international crimes because it contains within itself all international crime. So if we are not going to, and we're not, going to prosecute or put on trial the Bush administration, then the United States and its allies committed judicial murder after the trials of the Nazi high command and the German industrialists who also were put on trial. That's a hell of a thing for me to accept. Now, I don't know about anyone else, but to sit here and think, well, I'll be damned. All the history that I learned has been washed away by Bush and Cheney.
Yeah, but that's the truth. I mean, and you know, I mean, empires, that's what happens to empires. And so it's, you know, it's not that big of a surprise. It's sad. I mean, it's tragic, but I think it is true. That's where we are.
I guess we are. All right. Well, Dennis, thanks.
Well, Mike, hey, thanks a lot.
All right. Take care. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Excuse me. If you know, Dennis is absolutely right, and so is Bruce, whose emails I didn't read, and so is Michael in Roswell. I mean, this is where we are. But I don't think that was the argument that I was trying to make. I think the argument I was trying to make was if we are here, if we are at that point, then we have crossed several Rubicons to get here, and there's no going back. We can't declare ourselves any longer in our schools or our colleges or in our own heads. We can no longer declare ourselves to be, this beacon of justice and liberty. And there's Miss Justice with her blindfold on, holding aloft the scales of justice. We are no longer involved in truth. We are no longer. We're just not. These kinds of actions cannot be justified in terms of how we thought we were constituted. And that's the only point I'm making. If we have decided somehow, if somebody has decided, well, all that constitutional crap and that First Ten Amendment crap no longer applies if we don't want it to apply, then okay. Maybe we ought to begin teaching the truth. Which we don't have an Ice Cube's chance in hell of doing. Robert is driving in Dallas. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, I like what you talk about, but, you know, the real truth of the matter is that we don't make laws, we make crimes now.
We make what?
We make crimes.
Crimes?
Crimes, yes, and with those crimes comes punishment. That's what the American way turns out to be.
Robert, I'm missing a couple of words in your call. We don't commit. What did you say?
We don't make laws anymore.
We make
crimes.
Crimes. C-R-I-M-E-S.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I mean the government doesn't do things to limit themselves for liberty and prosperity. What they do is they create these crimes on pieces of paper to basically suppress people.
Well,
you know, these guys that sit down in Guantanamo Bay, irregardless of due process or a speedy trial, are being punished for a crime that was committed.
Well, okay. I hope I'm understanding you. If I rob a bank here in Atlanta and kill somebody in the process, and the police on the highway in Dallas stop you and charge you with my crime, I think that's what you're saying. I'm not sure. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in.
Better watch what you say, boy. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port, and our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the bar, 'cause we're the...
Ten before the hour. Dave is in Saskatchewan, Canada. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad. I just wanted to talk about those evildoers, the Koch brothers, and their plans to destroy the environment up here in Canada.
Now, what have they got lined up for Canadians?
Well, they've got, they fund several right-wing think tanks up here that are out to discredit any environmental discussions on any oil projects that are going on. And they're pretty heavily invested in the tar sands in northern Alberta.
They really are evil, aren't they?
They're very evil. I don't know what they think their billions of dollars is going to do for them when there's no planet left to spend it.
Well, yeah, that's what that's what normal people, the conclusion that normal people would come to. But I think it goes without saying that people like the Koch brothers are so sociopathic that they don't consider that sort of consequence of their actions. The first place, they don't believe the science. In the second place, I guess they figured that their money will always buy them a refuge someplace. And in third place, what really will happen when the revolution does come, the poor are going to track them down and eat them.
Right, exactly.
So I would hate to be in their position. I would hate to be cooked and eaten.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much involvement they have with our government up here, but money gets them all kinds of things.
Well, you're Stephen Harper is a nasty little right winger, just like Cameron in the UK, and I think that Bush was here. And I think that they all think the same way. They're all white. They're all English speakers. They all are manipulated willingly by people like Murdoch or people like the Koch brothers. I don't see any difference. You know, a thug is a thug is a thug. It doesn't make any difference what their nationality is.
Oh, exactly. So I just wanted to let your listeners know that they're also involved with their little evil ways up here as well as in your country.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave. I'm sorry to hear that, but I appreciate you checking in. Rosalie is in Bowie, Maryland. Hello, Rosalie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I wanted to, the conversation you were having previously, the last caller, about the president having the right to assassinate anyone at will. The first thing I want to point to say is that, I am a pacifist for as long as I can remember, and I've been a peace activist for 40 years. And my only child, my son, joined the Army 4 years ago.
Oh, my.
Has done tours in Afghanistan. Yes. So it's brought me into a world that I never expected to have anything to do with.
Right.
It was never anywhere on my radar screen that I would be an Army mom.
Uh-huh.
And given me a different perspective, I have not in any, not even in the least bit, lost, you know, who I am as a pacifist completely and, you know, an anti-war and activist. My son, who didn't really support that before, actually does now more than ever. And it was interesting to have watched his transformation through this process.
Your son supports our invasion and occupation of Afghanistan?
No.
Oh.
Supports my being a peace activist
He supports you.
Right, yes.
I gotcha.
We had a lot of interesting dialogues before he joined the Army and then before he went to Afghanistan. But, you know, we weren't in agreement on most things. But the conversations have really shifted and changed. And it's been interesting to see him, you know, his eyes open, his transformation.
Because of what he's seen.
Because of what he's seen and experienced. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, would that a lot of Americans who are pro-war, pro-invasion, pro-military, if they were given a rifle and not put down on their own, that wouldn't be fair, but put down in one of these countries in a company of Marines or Army or whomever, and understand what it is that they're there to do, and understand to some degree the people who already live there, I think a lot of folks would have the same experience perhaps that your son has had.
Yeah.
Is he back yet?
No. He's out of Afghanistan, but he's not home.
Is he on his way?
Well, he's not, like, physically on his way. He's in Europe right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
I know I still worry a lot about him because, you know, I read a lot, not the mainstream news because you wouldn't hear this there, but, you know, we're still averaging 18 suicides a day.
Yes.
U.S. And, so, you know, he seems okay on the phone, but he's far away. Can't talk to him in person and... You know, I don't really know how it's
going to
be.
Well, like. Rosalie, I certainly wish him a safe return, and I hope that maybe I'd, you know, if when he does come back, we'll have another conversation, you and I. And thank you very much for calling tonight. I do appreciate it. Take care, Rosalie. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.